Hi, this is Jackie Tantillo, and this is Should Have Listened to My Mother. My guest is a mom. She's the president of a very successful and well-known women's fashion brand in New York City. Her name is Kate Bandel, and I welcome you, Kate, to Should Have Listened to My Mother.
Well, thank you so very, very much for having me.
What is your mom's name, please?
My mother's name is Helen Brown Bandel.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up, actually, I was born in Albany, New York. But I grew up just outside of Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, wow. And then when was it, not until later on, that you moved to this New York metropolitan area?
Yes, I went to a wonderful school in upstate New York for college. And then I came to work for Bloomingdale's in New York City in 1980.
Did you stay at Bloomie's for long?
Actually, I was only at Bloomingdale's for about 4.5 years, and then I switched to what they called the dark side at the time, which was wholesale manufacturing side. So that's how I got into being the president of a ladies' fashion company.
And we'll chat about that a little bit later on, but first I want to talk about your mom, Helen. Where did she get her inspiration or her guidance, or who gave her her guidance to be the woman that had an influence on you?
Well, you know, I think it had a lot to do. My mom was a completely self-made woman. She was born in 1920 in the western part of North Carolina. Her family was the largest landowners in that part of the world. So they had a lot of land, so they were considered to be rich, but they were cash poor. Because, of course, all their money was invested in livestock and in crops and in all those things. And it was a very, very male-dominated society. She was one of three. She was the oldest of three. And there was a seven-year and then another seven-year split between her and her two younger brothers. So she clearly was the oldest. And quite frankly, her father didn't like that. And I think I'd like to refer to her as one of the women that I knew that she didn't understand what women's lib was because it wasn't popular at the time, but she certainly set the stage for that because she knew she had to get out there, take care of herself, and whatever was going to happen, she was going to have to push and make it happen on her own.
That's a really hard lesson to learn at a young age.
Well, it was from him from the negative perspective, and I believe from my grandmother from a positive perspective, because she, I think, pushed her to be, you know, to be more than just the girl that's going to be married off for land. And she was very, very encouraging of her educationally, and she facilitated it so that she could go to university at the age of 16. Where she went to junior college, because at that time, they didn't allow women into the four-year University of North Carolina, where she ended up graduating in Chapel Hill in 1940. So the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, one of five women.
Your mama, Helen.
My mother, Helen, exactly,
wow.
In 1940. And she told me at the time that there were three majors that she was allowed to take: nursing, teaching, and secretarial. And she wasn't interested in any of those things at all because she wanted to travel and see the world. But she picked teaching. Never did teach a thing, but I think she taught me a lot. So she realized that she wanted to get out of the South. That was not really for her. And she went to Detroit and had a great job in Detroit. And her boss told her, because she was influenced by many, many people along the way, her boss told her, Helen, you can do very, very well. You're very bright. However, I have to tell you, if you're going to be in the North, you've got to lose that Southern accent because nobody's going to take you seriously. So she went ahead and she studied Queen's English. So my mom actually spoke with a slight British accent, which is very interesting because at the time she really, you know, she had maybe British roots from way, way, way back, but she did it in order to lose her drawl.
And what line of work was this? What was she doing when her boss?
She worked for U.S. Tire and Rubber. Actually, she was a purchasing agent. But that was brief because then it was World War II and Pearl Harbor was bombed. And she decided to go and become part of the recovery team in Pearl Harbor. So she joined the USO Red Cross and she went to Hawaii and she lived there for about 3 years. At which time she married someone. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. He didn't turn out to be the person that she thought he was. And she left, and very interestingly enough, in junior college, her roommate had a great job. Her roommate had landed a job as secretary to the Secretary of the Navy. And she was able to help her get a job that took her overseas. And she ended up with a job where she worked with the military. She was a civilian working with the military. But she set up offices and enlisted clubs all over the world on behalf of the United States.
So she accomplished what she wanted to do, to travel.
Exactly. So she had a very, very, very progressive career, amazing career. At one point, she was a direct report to Eisenhower, which was quite phenomenal for a woman in those days. Of course, she was single, living all over the world and whatever. She was a very, very pretty woman. And she had, I think, an absolutely great, great career and life. And then she met my dad in the United States because she was working in Hondo, Texas, actually. Abilene Air Force Base was being set up, which was going to be the home of SAC, Strategic Air Command. And they were going to have the best officers and enlisted clubs and the best of the best of the best. And she met him there, and life changed.
How did it change? Because she stopped traveling and working?
Well, she married him, thinking, I believe, that he was going to be a career officer because she actually quite liked the lifestyle. But unfortunately, my dad decided not to do that. He was a SAC pilot, but he didn't have an interest in that. So they left military confines, moved to Albany, New York, where I was born. And by that time, she was already 38 years old, having a first and only child, by the way. I'm an only child. And I think that was a big change for her, a very, very big change. She was a super mom, but I think there was always something missing.
As in a career, did she go back to work after you were born? Did she ever work again?
You know, interestingly enough, she did. She went back to work when I was about 8 or 9 years old. By that time, we'd moved to Providence. There was not a lot of career opportunity for her there. She was a little bit older. And of course, you know, women in, I have to say, especially in what I would refer to as secondary cities, you know, not a New York, you know, not necessarily even a Boston, there were limited opportunities. So she had good executive jobs for what was available to her, but she also still wanted to be that perfect mom, you know, that would make me lunch and do all the things and give me everything that she could. But she took such a huge step back in her career. But I think there was always a little kind of thing in the back of her head. But that also made her push me.
Interesting. Could you sense that as a child, that she was missing something or a part of her was not always there, or was she always available for you?
She was always available, but there was something missing. And I could always sense that.
Oh, that's so hard for a kid.
It actually was very good, though. because unfortunately my dad got sick. And then she took care of him. But after that, she regenerated her career. And she went into real estate. And she was very, very, very good at it. And she kept her real estate license until she was 85 years old.
So she kept pushing forward, which is an important lesson for everybody.
Absolutely.
Do you have a memory that pops up where you can still see, sense, and feel her?
To tell you the truth, I think that we became friends after I was about 25 years old. So we did a lot of traveling together. We really had a lot of fun. But it took that amount of time in order to kind of overcome, I think, this empty feeling that she had of being a little trapped for someone who had, you know, traveled the world. Now she was a little bit trapped, you know, not able to experience her career anymore. And I think once she kind of bounced back from that, she became the person that she was previous.
So she was in her 60s when you were in your 20s. So, right? Because she had you almost at 40. So.
Exactly. But she restarted her career, you know, when she was in her 50s. So she used to always say, there's nothing you can't do at 60 that you can do at 40.
Hallelujah.
Which I think is fantastic.
Wow.
And I agree with her.
So were you a happy child? Were you sad?
No, very happy. Very happy. I had, to tell you the truth, I had probably a stronger relationship with my dad until I was about 25 years old. And then I realized everything that she had given up and everything that, you know, that she had done, and then I could appreciate it. So I would say I had a very happy childhood. It just wasn't a lot of what you'd call typical mom behavior.
Hugs and kisses? Was she warm and affectionate, or was it?
Not particularly.
Not particularly.
I think when my son was born, when I was about 29 years old, she got to kind of relive it. And she was very, very affectionate with him.
She kind of woke up.
I think so. I think so. I think she stopped being sad about giving everything up. And she realized that she had an opportunity to kind of do it all over again.
What would you say to her now to let her forgive herself? Didn't it get in the way all those years of her being unhappy? So many women are working women now, and they've had to give it up now to take care of kids because of COVID.
Exactly, exactly. I don't think that people should give up. I think that you can do both. And I think that it's not necessary to give it up. Unfortunately, I think at that time, she probably was right. She probably did need to do, you know, the right thing. But I don't think it's necessary anymore. I don't believe that one bit.
Was your father pressuring her to stay at home and be the good mom? Did she feel that from him or not?
Not particularly. But I think that she felt that she needed to somewhat fulfill a traditional role. Because things were more traditional at the time. So, therefore, she just did it. You know, I don't think she did it, but she was a little resentful of it.
Right.
However, I think that it's great that she got to live till 97 years old and have, again, another full career, get to travel a lot again, and really kind of change her attitudes.
And be who she felt that she was inside.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes, I think that was really important. Very fortunate that she did get to live such a nice, long, full life. Because she had many phases and many things. But I will say that I do think that the confines of, you know, kind of the confines of being a mom for her were difficult. And once she felt that she didn't have those confines anymore, she then could become who she had been and really enjoy things again.
Was your mom a homemaker? Was she sewing and baking all the time?
Absolutely not. She was working in... No, absolutely not. She thought herself a good cook, but she was terrible at it. She kept a beautiful home. She loved to have things to entertain, but she never really had time to entertain because she did, you know, go back to work. So they didn't entertain a lot. Again, until my dad died in 1992. And then my mom kind of just was reborn, I think. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was a new, it was a new shot for her. And she really enjoyed her family and loved to travel, had a lot of fun. It was really great that she had a second shot.
Yeah, not many people do, or they don't take advantage of it, or a second or a third or a fourth shot. So when you say that she was a terrible cook, what would she, what do you remember what some of the meals were?
Oh, my gosh. Well, she always thought she was a good cook, but that was the sad part. She loved to make beef and kidney stew. Oh, my God, I couldn't even be in the house with that. My dad actually did a lot of cooking. He loved to grill steaks and burgers and everything in the backyard. And so he kind of handled that situation by doing a lot of the cooking. She had some really, really funny phrases. So she would say one day at the kitchen table, because she hated to cook, she wanted, at the end of her life, she did say everybody should just remove their kitchens and the houses should be bedrooms and bathrooms and party rooms, and that's it.
I love that.
Which was really pretty funny. And she stood up from the breakfast table one time and screamed at my father, "George, you do 90% of the eating in this house, so you will be doing 100% of the shopping." I thought that was absolutely hilarious.
That's
my
great.
Father said, okay. Yeah, he was a very gentle giant. Because she did not like that grocery shopping, cooking, cleaning thing. That was absolutely not for her.
It's not for everybody.
Chain me to the kitchen.
It's not for moms that do it all the time necessarily now. But
yeah, exactly.
Someone's got to do
exactly.
It. So
somehow I do believe that there is a better balance now. You know, that people have figured out how to share responsibility a little bit more. That what was traditional is not necessarily the best way. So I just think that it was fabulous that she could kind of unshackle herself, because I do believe that she just felt very confined, very, very confined. Having been somebody who traveled so much and had such an extensive career, that, you know, to be confined to having to take care of a child and a household and those things, it just wasn't in her DNA. But that's okay, because she still did a great job at it.
Right.
Just because she didn't like it doesn't mean that she didn't do a good job.
Did you have friends over? I mean, I know this was, you know, it's not like play dates now, but did your mom interact with any of the other local moms in town?
My mom did not interact with any of the local moms in town because she didn't have anything in common with them. She'd been a career person and traveled, and unfortunately, most of them were 20 years, maybe 15, 20 years her junior. A lot of them hadn't graduated from college. They'd never been anywhere, and she just couldn't relate. And I didn't understand it at the time, but, you know, I do understand that she was kind of just somebody who was a little bit in the wrong place, but she did love, love, love her house. So she spent a lot of time reading, you know, free time. And then, as I said, after my father died in 92, she traveled with me a lot, and we had a great time. Absolutely great. Spent a lot of time with my son, who is now 33. So, yeah, it was a whole new thing for her, and I think it was awesome.
And when you were raising your son, did this whole message of your mom and how you were raised affect how you raised your son?
We were very, very different. Very different. Similar in certain things, but different. You know, my son, also being an only child, I wanted him to have friends over all the time. My mom didn't really have time for that. So all of my social gatherings were outside of the house. Although my father did refinish my basement so that my friends could come over because he was of the philosophy, I'd rather have the kids where I can see them and I know what they're doing.
Sure.
So I adopted that philosophy with my son because I knew I didn't want him to be alone, even though he was an only child, and I wanted all of his friends to feel very welcome in our home like it was their home. So that was clearly different because his friends are very close, and I'm still close to his friends. So that, I think, was a big, big difference. However, they absolutely adored my mom because my mom did start spending a lot of time with us. And I think they just loved Helen because she then would do things with them. She took them to their games when I was working because I also have an aggressive career. So she kind of ended up filling in many ways for me when I needed to travel, and I thought it was fantastic. So again, she enjoyed it, but she enjoyed it at her pace.
And when you were young, she was working, taking care of the house. She was really, really busy.
And working very hard. And even though the jobs were beneath her, you know, she still was working.
And probably not
have a job that. A little less, let's call it not a senior executive level job, doesn't mean that you don't put your all into it to do a good job if you're that kind of person.
And she was that kind of person. Right, she was definitely that kind of person.
Exactly. She was very, very much, I would say, a perfectionist.
She probably turned that whole office around.
That's right. And she had a lot of conflict even for doing it. I mean, most of her bosses, I'm going to say, were male and gave her a very, very hard time. They just kind of wanted her to shut up and do her work. And she was not somebody who was going to shut up and do their work. That was not who she was. So I know she had a lot of frustration because of circumstances and timing and those kind of things. So, it was difficult. But when she got into something that she could do on her own, which she could be master of her own destiny, she did incredibly well. And all of her clients loved her. She did the best for them that she could. Some of them called her right until she was in her 90s. So she was very good at whatever she chose to do. She was very, very good at it.
Well, she was one of the ones that cut this path for us.
Exactly. It is.
She was the groundbreaking. That is not easy. Everywhere she went, people probably thought she was out of line, and especially the male bosses.
Yes, exactly. And I think that was difficult for her. In the military, it worked because her job was unique and she was setting up entertainment facilities. And a lot of it had to do with the decor and decorating and things like that. So she wasn't stepping on anybody's toes to make a decision that wasn't her place.
Right. She wasn't threatening anybody.
Therefore, she was just doing great in a woman's position. The second that she stepped foot into, it could be a man's position or a woman's position, she stepped on a lot of toes. No doubt about it. But she quite liked that. She wasn't going to take no for an answer or a backseat to anybody.
So she liked stepping on toes.
Well, you know what? If they needed stepping, she would stop. I don't think she particularly liked it. I don't think that was her goal. But I think she would say today, if you need your toes to be stepped on, I'm the gal to do it. Trust me.
Wow, that confidence. So that's confidence. She was educated.
Yeah, very incredibly confident.
Wow. If we could bottle that and give that out to the world, that would be great, right? Bottling
well,
confidence.
I think it's what people lack. You know, a lot of people have none, unfortunately.
This Nina Leonard fashion line that you represent, I love your slogan's attitude, not age, but you help women feel more confident. And I think clothing has a lot to do with women's confidence?
Oh, well, absolutely. When you feel good and you know you look good, you're absolutely more confident with everything you do.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that there's an association.
Was your mom dressed to the nines all the time?
My mom dressed extremely well. She wasn't a high designer fashion consumer, but she always looked extremely well put together. And I think that's the key. She was always put together. She always knew how to take whatever she had and make it look her very best. She was always sharp. Everything was always wrinkle-free and coordinated, and nothing was ever looked like she'd worn it before, or no scuffs on the shoes. She was very well pulled together. And I think she did it with a lot of ease because she had a lot of style.
I wish I could have met her, but I've met you.
Very, very unique. Very, very, very unique. All my friends that knew her absolutely adored her. Now, again, I have to say, she was somewhat removed from all my friends when I was in high school and things like that. She could have maybe named five. And of those five, she knew them, but didn't know them well. But later on in life, she was intimately involved with my friends, and she became friends with my friends. There's no doubt. She was as good a friend with them as I was.
I'm so glad she got that second chance to be who she really was.
Me too.
And you got to hang out with her and travel with her, and she came, you could see that light radiating, I'm sure, again, which is really important.
Yes, people were very attracted to her. She was, as I said, an attractive woman, but not a massive beauty. I'm not going to say that. She was just, there was something about her that was very, I can use no other word than attractive. People kind of flocked to her. You know, she was interesting, and she had a lot to say. And but you had to ask her. She wasn't somebody who was outspoken. But the second asked, she would say. So I thought that was kind of terrific. So she had a demure side, but inside she had a lot of character and a lot of confidence and a lot of things to say. So, yes, a very, very unique, very interesting individual, and I did get a lot from her.
That lioness came out.
Absolutely.
We got to bring that with us every day.
Yes,
thank you,
for
Helen.
Sure.
Oh, Kate Bandel.
Yes.
You've been an absolute joy to speak with. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Jackie. I really appreciate it.
And make sure you go to shop and find the Nina Leonard fashion line. And you are a busy woman because you're always talking to QVC Italia and QVC in France, and you're all over the world. So I wish you the best of luck, and I really love and admire that you're bringing these clothing designs to women to help empower them and make them feel better about themselves.
Well, thank you, Jackie. I really love what I do, and I hope a lot of women get a lot of benefit from it. Because that's what it's all about, making yourself feel good.
And that's exactly what this podcast is about, helping us learn and grow and feel better about ourselves. Perfect, Kate Bandel. So this is where I usually wrap up and say goodbye, but I have a little postscript to add. After the interview, I was in touch with Kate to make sure that she was okay, because I noticed she had gotten a little emotional, and I wanted to just, you know, see how she was. She wrote back, "Hi, Jackie, I loved doing it. I hope I was not too emotional. One does not realize how sensitive topics can be until they begin to articulate them. I hope that it comes out the way I really meant it. My mom was a fantastic person, wonderful role model, and a great mom and grandmother. She just struggled with being a perfectionist and took motherhood as a very serious and confining job. When I turned 25, she was 63, and she realized that I was going along a strong path and going to be okay in life. She could relax and become herself again. Thank goodness she had another 34 years to become her former self again and really enjoy the rewards of the seeds she had sown and all her hard work. She was fun-loving and a great friend to me and so many of my friends, to her grandson and his friends as well. She was a wonderful role model for so many people, and I hope that comes across. Thank you, Kate Bandel. And we'll see you next week on Should Have Listened to My Mother.